Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Well, there's a lot on the government's table this morning, as we discussed with Taoiseach Micheál Martin earlier. We'll get some analysis of the current COVID situation and cost of living measures in a moment. But first, there are significant changes due on how judges are appointed in a new Judicial Appointments Commission bill, which is being published today. We can get more on this now from Daniel McConnell, who's political editor with the Irish Examiner. And I'm also joined by Shane Ross, former minister who pushed for reforms to judicial appointments during his time in government. You're both very welcome. Daniel, let's start with you. Will you talk us through what's happening, what this will involve?
Yeah, sure. So this is the publication of the Judicial Appointments Commission Bill 2022, and ultimately what it basically stands down the current body, which is the Judicial Appointments Appeals Board, which makes the recommendation to government as to who should or shouldn't be a member of the judiciary. This was obviously subject to much criticism and consternation in the previous government, which Mr. Ross was a member of, and obviously we know there was the time when he and his independent colleagues were essentially blocking judicial appointments for a long period of time. Under this new bill, essentially, people who go for or want to be a judge have to be interviewed, and that includes existing judges. So judges, say, maybe in a lower court who want to go to the High Court or even higher than that, will now have to be subject to an interview. They will have to show that they have undergone judicial training or continuous professional development throughout their career before either becoming a judge or during their period as a judge. We also know that this, the manner of recommendations as well, is this is the key recommendation, is that only persons recommended by this commission can be recommended by the government for appointment of the president. That ultimately removes the power of an individual minister to handpick a crony or a pal of theirs to become a judge. And that is obviously one of the key measures that Shane Ross would have been looking for previously.
Okay, so Shane Ross, what do you think?
Well, let me say, first of all, that there, it is a great acknowledgement of the fact that the way that judges have been appointed has been absolutely crazy in the last century, and that reforms were needed. And we do have some welcome aspects in this bill. You've got interviews, which is a very good thing, and which would never never happen before. You've got one rule for all. In other words, judges will have to apply through the same system as anybody else, and they won't get a kind of shortcut up there. We've got this. We've got a new system whereby three names come up and not five, which has been changed and restricted in this training. And all those aspects are very, very good. But you have to ask the question, is this a fundamental change? I see it's been greeted in the press release as the greatest, as the best reform of judicial appointments for 25 years, but it's the only one. But you have to ask the question, is it going to make any difference? And if you read the small print, and the bill isn't published yet, so there is a caveat there. If you read the small print, you'll see that there's some pretty strange things in here which are probably not as good as we've been led to believe. For instance, there will be no ranking in the names that go up to the minister from the GAC, the new judicial appointments body. So in other words, the minister will get a choice of a certain numbers. The second thing is that the chief executive of this new body, and this is very important, this new body which is being set up, is going to be a permanent chief executive, it's going to be appointed and has been switched from the commission to the minister in the meantime, since the issuing of the general scheme. That's a very important appointment. So that's going to be a political appointee. There are going to be four lay people on the body, and that's very important. And we were looking for lay people, but all four of these lay people will be appointed as well by the minister. So we're going to get a lot of political control remaining on this, and ultimately I suspect that we'll find that the appointments of judges are marginally better, but that the political control remains, because you've got a judicial appointments body now which has four lay people appointed by the government.
And you wanted those lay people to be completely independent so that they might rock the boat, if you like.
Well, to talk about is a good word. What we wanted was people who will challenge the judges. On this new body, there would be four judges and four lay people. And the great hope was that the four lay people, and I think the numbers are wrong with them, but the four lay people would be people who will actually challenge the judges. But the judges will dominate this new body, and the Attorney General will be there as well. But
with no vote, though. The Attorney General has no vote. Is that right?
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. The Attorney General won't have a vote, but if there are going to be any votes on it, which is very unusual on these bodies, but the Attorney General will have immense influence and great power, because the Attorney General will sit on this body, advising this body with the four judges, and then will sit at the cabinet which makes the appointment. So the Attorney General will actually be key, even if he or she doesn't have a vote.
Yeah, but I mean,
the Attorney General there
who was appointed, by the way. The Attorney General was appointed by the Taoiseach.
Mm-hmm. But in fairness, you're acknowledging that there are improvements there, like even if it doesn't go the whole way towards what you were looking for.
I don't think it's going to get the result which we would have liked, which is that the judges who are going to be sitting here making these appointments will challenge. The judges and the Attorney General are going to dominate this body because there are going to be 4+1 of them. And you're going to have lay people who have been now very cleverly appointed by the minister, which is unfortunate that that's the case. Instead of that, what we wanted was to have people from independent bodies who are interested bodies like, you know, the Rape Crisis Centre, the Victims Groups, our Civil Liberties, having nominees there who will challenge, the judges and not be frightened to stand up to them when appointments like this sort are being made. And the last thing which worries me, and we haven't seen the bill, which is a really unusual way of asking, you know, people to accept what's coming in. The last thing that really worries me is that when the judges, when the names go up to the minister, the minister is requiring that he or she also get the names of all those people who failed. So they want to have a good look at who didn't get on, which could be 40 or 50 or 30 or 20 people, I don't know, as well, which is no business of the government whatsoever.
Well, what difference does it make? Because they can't pick from the people who didn't come through the process.
Correct. So why do they want it? And you have to ask the question, why do they? It's actually no business of them whatsoever to have those names. You can only think that they want those names because they want to know who's in the mix for the next round. And that smells to me of political control. And here we have a fairly subtle way of producing the same result of getting people who the government wants and the party in power wants into these positions. But it's rather better dressed this time than it was before.
And you mentioned the fact that the recommended names that go forward, that they won't be ranked. I know that the Irish Council for Civil Liberties suggested that they should be ranked. Why is that important?
It's very important so that we know why the government, if they want to go down to number three, why they've done so. If in other words, it gives a certain amount of independence to the body making the recommendation, that they have that, and they have the status of independence when they go. They send up three names. They say, well, that's our first choice, that's our second choice, that's our third. The government doesn't want that, because the government wants to be able to say, no, we're going to go for the third one, right? But they don't want to be exposed as going for the third one, because they're going to have to explain it. And I think it would be very important that they're ranked, because otherwise they're going to get three names and they're just going to go for the one that, as they always have done, the one with whom they are in compliance and who's their favourite. If they get three and they go for the third, they're going to have to explain it.
You know what I'm thinking now is, because you're a layperson, you could be on the Judicial Appointments Commission yourself.
And that would be a political appointment, which I'm not likely to be Helen McAtee's or anybody else's favourite son, so I can tell you that.
Well, who knows? But I mean, you could keep a close eye on things if you were on the commission, right?
What you need on that commission is people who will challenge the judges. You don't want to get people who are very conservative or who are very set in their ways, very good people, but who are actually part of the system. You want people who come from bodies who will challenge the judges. That's what's important. And this is exactly what we're not going to get from what we see from this bill today.
Shane, thank you for joining us. Shane Ross there, we'll let you go. Daniel McConnell, though, is staying with us. And Daniel, I want to turn to some of the other issues facing the government today. The Cabinet Subcommittee on Health is meeting. Government, though, really remaining resistant to any increase in measures to combat rising COVID numbers. Micheál Martin telling us earlier that the current wave, he says, doesn't justify a return to restrictions. No sign, is there, of any flexibility on that, even on the mask wearing?
No, there isn't. And I think there's probably a political reality here is that, you know, the government shipped an awful lot of criticism last year when it stuck very rigidly to public health advice when, I suppose, a lot of people were calling for restrictions to be lifted much earlier. Obviously, we're in a flipped situation now where obviously there is a good deal of concern. And obviously, I think you mentioned Fergal Hickey's warning this morning in that interview with the Taoiseach within the last hour or so. I mean, clearly there is strain and pressure on the system. Again, the vibe coming out of both parliamentary party meetings last night is, well, when isn't there kind of pressure on the health service? And, you know, I think Leo Varadkar made the point in some forum that, you know, we don't have sort of health measures every year when there's a flu season, you know, ultimately that this is, you know, kind of normal life returning, notwithstanding the pressure that is on the health service. I think there is a, as I said, there's a sort of a very, there would be a political cost, I think, to reintroducing kind of restrictions or measures of that form, and I just don't think the government's in the mindset to do it just yet. However, I do think that situation is open to review, and obviously the setting up of this NEFIT 2 or new NEFIT or whatever you want to we'll call it, I think that will determine things kind of in the more medium term. But in the immediate sense, I don't get any sense of any immediate return to restrictions as of now.
So it would have to come from a public health advice position, not from Fergal Hickey and the INMO and Luke O'Neill saying, look, the least you can do is introduce the mask wearing and it'll just buy a bit of time here.
Yeah, and I think also as well, I think there was certainly the feeling last week that, you know, this particular wave is obviously kind of, we're in the teeth of this wave at the moment, but there is an expectation, Denmark has obviously been cited, that the numbers fell off pretty quickly there. So there's a hope that that could happen here as, one, the weather improves, and two, you know, that we might be able to kind of get ourselves through this particular kind of difficult period. But I just think, again, from the ministers I've been speaking to over the last 48 hours or so, you know, there's no appetite to return back to a sort of a restrictions-based model. They're very keen to kind of emphasise this one on guidance rather than regulations. We know that as of today, the last of the emergency measures, they lapse, you know, by way of, you know, the timescale on those, they lapse as of midnight tonight.
Yes.
So, and there's no, you know, that point was being raised by the likes of Matty McGrath and the Dáil yesterday, you know, was there going to be any continuation? And the Taoiseach made it very clear, no, they lapse and that's it.
Is there any sense then, because we see mentioned in reports of today that thoughts might be more focused on next winter, and that's more what the government is thinking about in terms of when any COVID measures or restrictions might come back?
Yeah, I've certainly seen a number of sort of cabinet memos in recent weeks, and you've seen mention of, I suppose, the seasonality of COVID-19, and ultimately, I think one of the lessons that they wanted to learn was about, you know, deconstructing the mechanisms and the infrastructure around testing and tracing and all the rest of it. And I think what they're trying to do is get to a position where they can ramp up that very quickly in the autumn if it's required. And ultimately, I do think, you know, there will be a concern. And again, a lot of the political messaging in recent times has been, you know, there is a seasonal aspect to COVID. You know, it will be more acute come the autumn and winter, but I think there was a real lesson learned last year about the slow pace of reopening last year, the damage that did not only to school children but to businesses across the society. Mm-hmm. They want to give those businesses as much of a chance as they can this year in case there is a sort of a further rather pernicious wave later in the year where they may have to reintroduce restrictions.
Let's hope not. Now, you've been hearing from Michael McGrath in the last few minutes. What's he been saying?
Yeah, so he's been launching this blended civil service scheme for public workers. Obviously, COVID-19 has changed utterly the way most people work, and what they're now saying is that up to 20% of civil servants will have the right to essentially work, you know, on a blended mechanism. No one will have 100% working from home. No one will have 100% working in the office if they don't want to. But ultimately, the goal is to have at least 20% of civil servants kind of working on this blended model. Now, obviously, it's not applicable to everybody. I mean, obviously, there are some people who have to be in a classroom or have to be at a counter or have to be in an operating theatre, so it won't apply to them. But for the sort of normal, traditional, office-bound civil servant, this is a kind of a permanent readjustment to their working life as envisioned, and the plan is to kind of roll that out to the entire public service, all 340,000 of them, in due course. But obviously this is a significant sea change from the government.
Look, cost of living, the costs associated with that for government, the crisis in Ukraine, I mean the numbers that we were talking about with the Taoiseach there, 2.5 billion, and he was saying that he's not expecting much help to come from the EU in terms of footing the bill. How much worry is there, Daniel, in government circles about the money?
There's an awful lot of mounting concern around that. We have, I suppose, gotten used to spending silly money, as they say, or, you know, as one minister keeps saying it to me when I speak to him, he says, you know, we've been living on Skittles for the last 2 years and we can't continue to do so. And you know, we look at our national debt, it's extremely high. We look at, you know, while Pascal Donoghue and Michael McGrath continuously talk about, you know, getting to a balanced situation in the lifetime of this government, you know, we're still in a position where our debt has gone, you know, has gone stratospheric now over the last few years, and COVID-19 has added another 32, 33 billion to that. Without question, Ukraine is going to be a permanent added pressure to the system. You know, when you have, you know, upwards of maybe 100,000, maybe more than that coming into the country, they will all have to be facilitated by way of housing, healthcare, education, and a lot of those people coming in will have very acute needs as well, additional needs. And we obviously know, I mean, your own programme almost on a daily basis covered the CAMHS situation in Kerry and elsewhere. So those pressures are very real, and there is a real concern that, one, we won't be able to do everything that we need to do. Two, that the money simply isn't there. Or when we get to a position where all that COVID money is having to be kind of withdrawn, real pressure is going to come on services and very, very difficult decisions are going to have to be taken, and that could lead to some very interesting conversations within government.
But the Taoiseach saying there this morning when he was in with us, you know, that he does accept that targeted measures are going to be needed now to help those most affected by the cost of living increases. So there is, it would seem, more to come.
Yeah, I think, you know, they've made it quite clear, though, you know, they may come later in the year, but they're certainly not planned to come before October's budget. Now, that situation may change, but ultimately, you know, obviously there's a lot of talk around, like the opposition have been very critical of the fact that the carbon tax increases are due to kick in May, and there have been calls for those to be kind of paused or waived, and the government have set their face against that. And ultimately, Michael McGrath and Pascal Dunne, who have repeatedly said, listen, what we've done since Budget Day, which is about $1.5 billion to $2 billion in additional measures, that's it, really. We can't do much more, because otherwise you're getting into that kind of position of chasing inflation. So the government is really on the horns of a dilemma here. You know, if it doesn't do it, it's accused of being out of touch. If it does do it, it's sort of being accused of being reckless and kind of, as I said, chasing inflation and almost driving pressure and driving prices up. Like, I mean, I think, you know, the point made in relation to the excise move, I mean, that literally had zero impact for an awful lot of people.
Yeah.
And obviously there was some opportunistic measures being taken by some petrol outlets across the country, and has obviously been the subject of much debate in recent weeks. But, you know, there is a limit to what government can do, and I think that has been emphasised by Micheál Martin, Pascal Dunne, Leo Varadkar and Michael McGrath in the last 48 hours. There is a limit to what government can actually do, but it doesn't make it any easier. And certainly, you know, when you see both Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil at sub 20% in the polls, some degree of panic is beginning to sit in, particularly in Fine Gael, as to what they can do, because, you know, they, you know, a 19% poll rating come election time would have devastating consequences for them electorally.
Yeah, interesting to see how that one plays out. Now, there's a Shannon by-election count ongoing. It's pretty tight. It's really interesting. The counting started again this morning. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, so literally the first count happened late last night. So Hugh O'Neill, who is obviously very well known, was top of the poll, but there's a glut of candidates there at the top, including the likes of Hazel Chu. So I'm just checking the latest, I'm just seeing if there's any more. Of count four, it looks like that Maureen Gaffney and Hugh O'Neill are certainly kind of almost neck and neck.
Go one better than you, because I have the results of the fifth count. I don't know
if you
have that in front of you, but we have the elimination of Owen Barry in that count, and we have Ray Bassett there at 12,475. Well, this is an alphabetical order, so let's take a look at the number of votes. Tom Clonan is there. It's all very tight at the top. Maureen Gaffney, as you say, Hugo McNeill there too. There's a bit of a way to go.
There is, and obviously there's a lot of candidates to be eliminated. But ultimately, I suppose when you get down to that last two or three candidates, the order of elimination will become very keen. So if for example Hazel Chu went out ahead of a Ray Bassett ahead of Hugo McNeill, or if Hugh McNeill went out ahead of, that will determine the ultimate the outcome of this. One to watch, I think, though, Claire, is Maureen Gaffney, because she is right there in the mix, and she might be seen as more transfer friendly than the others. She'll certainly be one to watch as coming the closing ends or the closing stages of the counts.
Okay, when are you expecting the result?
They're guiding us at some time later today, but again, like, predicting when counts conclude is a fool's errand, because, you know, we've been told many times that it'll be done within an hour and you could be waiting 4 hours later. So it just depends on the speed of counting and whether or not there's any sort of a recount. And if it gets very, very tight towards the end, undoubtedly there will be a recount. So it could drag on quite late tonight, I think.
Ray Bassett is 12th there. I just read his name out first because he was
in alphabetical
order. Yeah. But as we say, the runners and riders there are the ones that you mentioned. Hugo McNeill, we have Tom Clonan, Maureen Gaffney and Hazel Chu, fourth and still in the mix. But there is, as we say, a way to go. Daniel, thanks very much. Good to talk to you. Daniel McConnell there from The Examiner. Let's take a break.
Today with Clare Byrne. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.